Welcome to the URM Journey to Academic Medicine podcast, also known as the URM Jam, brought to you by the Society of Teachers of Family Medicine.
On this podcast, we will address the real and perceived barriers faced by historically underrepresented in medicine students and residents who are considering a career in academic family medicine. We'll provide practical tips and personal advice on topics like leadership, scholarly activity, CVs, mentorship, and more.
I'm Dr. Omari Hodge.
And I'm Dr. Tochi Iroku-Maliz. And this is URM Jam. Hello, everyone. Today we have Dr. Byron Jasper. Originally from Hama, Dr. Jasper is the founder and chief executive officer of Bijah Clinic, the first Black-owned direct primary care practice in the state of Louisiana. A native of Hama, Louisiana, Dr. Jasper confirmed his passion for teaching and mentoring, as well as his desire to learn more about improving community health during his residency in family medicine. After successfully completing his residency, Dr. Jasper decided to pursue a fellowship in academic and community medicine. He chose the Washington, D.C. area and eventually completed the Community Health Leadership Development Fellowship at Georgetown University School of Medicine. After this transformative training experience, Dr. Jasper decided to pursue an additional fellowship focusing on HIV and hepatitis C in primary care. And this was completed at Providence Hospital, also in Washington, D.C. During his time in fellowship, he saw it necessary to create a comprehensive medical mentoring program, better known as CMMP, because of his realization that there has been minimal growth in the number of minority physicians despite their important role in reducing health disparities. CMMP has grown to become a successful nonprofit organization in multiple states across the country, and Dr. Jasper continues to proudly serve as its founder, national president, and executive director. Dr. Jasper is board certified in family medicine, a proud alumnus of Xavier University of Louisiana, and a graduate of both Tulane School of Medicine and Tulane School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine.
Dr. Jasper, thank you for coming on today, and we are so excited to have you. And we're going to jump right in because we have some important questions to ask you for us and for our listeners. So we just heard your bio from Dr. Tochi, and it's quite impressive. But I just wondered, maybe you can, in your own words, tell us a little bit about yourself, focusing on particularly why mentoring became a passion of yours and a focus for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me, first and foremost. I appreciate the opportunity to share my story, share my experiences, and also give people a chance to look at things slightly different than what it looks like on paper, which a lot of times when you read the bio, you hear all these wonderful highlights, but you don't know the full story. So giving a chance to dive a little bit deeper, the reason why mentoring became important to me is because I actually had a tough time going through medical school. I almost actually got put out of medical school. And a lot of people who know me closely know that story, but a lot of people who may see me out and about or read about me on a website will not know that story. So to go into more detail, I had trouble passing step one. I actually failed step one three times. So I failed step one so many times that I joke around with a lot of my friends that USMLE probably has a building with my name on it for all the money that I gave them. I gave them so much money. They was like, look, we just gonna put a statue out here for you, Dr. Jasper. But what I ended up doing was being put on academic probation at my medical school. And they basically said, you have one more time to take step one. And if you don't pass, you're basically going to get kicked out. And it was that mentor that actually was in my life that helped me get over the hump. And very short version of that story is that I had a doctor who I knew who was actually an attending at the medical school I was at, knew him from a personal side, but not necessarily a mentor in the truest sense. And we literally rotated together. He taught me some of the things in family medicine. And the conversation came up and I told him, you know, all my struggles. And he said, look, Byron, I don't have an idea that you don't belong in medical school. He said, you have the bedside manner. You have the knowledge. You have all the tools you need. He said, you just don't know how to take this test. And, you know, it hit me. And I was just like thinking I did pretty well. And I'm not necessarily the best test taker, but very honest in the sense of, I think that I had it in my head that it was something else, you know, that imposter syndrome that you'll hear people talk about. Like, I'm not sure if I belong here. However, he was like, you can do this. I just think you need to figure out how to take the test. So he sat me down and gave me the game. as I like to tell people, he literally ran it down. He said, you just need to do a lot more questions. He said, I don't think you've seen enough questions to know all of the things that are on the test. After you've seen it six or seven times, they can't ask it to you any other way. But if you only see it once or twice and they ask it to you three, four, five, six different ways, you're going to miss the question. So he sat me down and gave me the game to the point where he started mentoring me. And he told me exactly what I needed to do. And of course, not really having a mentor, I never knew all of the benefits, so to speak, of it. Had people in my life, but not a direct mentor. And when he did that, I took a leap of faith. I listened to what he said and I passed. I literally passed on the fourth and final try, which it wouldn't be a Dr. Jasper had I not had a mentor. So I believe in the power of mentoring. I know what it can do. And imagine had that mentor been in my life from day one. I got to med school on day one and he was there. It would have changed my trajectory, right? Not saying I wouldn't be a family med doc, but I may have been on a whole different stratosphere on what I could or would do, knowing on day one what that mentor could have taught me based on his experience. And the funny story about him, he had the same struggles with step one.
Wow.
He literally said, I had the same problem you had, but his story was slightly different. His father passed away during medical school.
Oh.
So he was dealing with his father passing away, trying to take tests, trying to be the man of the house, trying to do all these things. And a Black male attending physician who was in my life at the time where I was at my greatest struggle is the reason why I am here today. So that mentor piece, having someone who looks like you, having someone who comes where you come from, having someone who speaks the language you speak, it just is game changing. And I don't think people realize that power until they see it happen either for them or they help someone do it themselves. So I'm a huge advocate for mentoring. I do it all the time, whether on purpose or on accident, but my goal is to make sure no one has to go through the same struggles I went through if they don't have to. Sometimes you have to walk that walk to learn who you are and to get that medal, if you will, of testing yourself and becoming the person you're meant to be. And I believe that's why I went through what I went through to be where I am today. Had I not went through it, I probably wouldn't be mentoring as much as I was. However, I think when you say, if I can help you not ever have to struggle by just being a part of your life, giving you advice, dropping these gems on you, giving you the game, why not? And it's easy. It's not difficult. It doesn't cost anything. And if it does cost something, the most thing it costs is your time. So, I could go on and on, as you can tell, because it's something I'm really passionate about. But I know it's a game changer for people when you have it.
That's absolutely amazing. You know, one of the things that I tell people many times is when choosing a mentor or anybody who you need advice from, really stay close to the ones that'll show you their battle scars. Don't worry about the ones who tell you all their accolades and everything that they've done well. But if you want somebody who can really walk with you hand in hand, you want somebody who can show you when it was rough, what it looks
absolutely
like.
I'll jump in and say, I'm gonna go one step further with you. I tell people all the time, I want people on my team who are battle tested. I don't want the people who got the highlight reel. I mean, everybody looks good on the highlight reel.
Right.
My students are usually the ones that, as my brother said, I talk about different podcasts that I've been on, and my brother drops gems on me all the time. He's technically a mentor, what I call with life skills. My brother tells me random phrases, and he said, you know, you better get it out the mud. And I never really heard that phrase before, but he's military. And he said, if you understand what that means, the idea is you just go and get it. You don't have to have it delivered in this beautiful box with a bow on it, but you're going to make it happen. And that's the students that I have in our organization. They're literally the students that are like, look, I ain't got but two nickels to rub together, but we're going to make a meal, right? And that's the people I want to cover my, you know what, right? I want them to be in my circle. So if something doesn't go right, they're not going to panic. They're not going to quit. They're going to be like, well, this is Tuesday, right? Like, so it's to the point where we get in the groove of having those students that don't look perfect on paper, but they got a life experience that's going to tell you when this complex patient walks through your door, this is nothing. This is easy. And we can do this in our sleep. So I really believe in the idea of having those scars being, you know, being proud of them. And if you're proud of them, you show them in the right way. People will start to say, you know what? I know that person is true. They're not hiding anything. They're not dressing it up. They're going to get that package as best as possible.
Something else that you touched on that I'll mention really quick. My thoughts gravitated as I heard you speak is I think one of the reasons why people don't understand the value of mentorship might be their success. And what I mean by that is you started off talking about step one and how that really showed you the value of mentorship because you really had to show your wounds and ask for help. But what about the many people who pass it on their first go and think that I don't need a mentor because I'm doing quite well. I'm right there in the median. And so I'm okay. It made me realize that those people actually might be worse off because they still may not be reaching their potential because they haven't really understood how much they need a mentor.
And I agree. I think the idea of mentoring is we often think it's for those who are necessarily in need in some way. You need a mentor because you have struggles. You need a mentor because you don't have all the opportunities set forth before you. But it's not actually the case. A mentor can be there when you're at the highest of highs to help you get to the next level and to actually make connections for you so things are easier, right? We may have mentors in different fields and different parts of our life, and we don't look at them as mentors. We may call them a coach. We may call them a parent. We may call them an advisor. We may call them a guidance counselor. But the idea is that those people help to pour into you certain things, certain ideas, certain values that allow you to be a better person. Mm-hmm. So a mentor is just a different way of saying someone who's going to help you get to the next level in whatever field you need it to be. And mentoring often is associated with academics, but mentors don't have to be academic and academic alone. You can have a mentor who literally helps you financially. You can have a mentor who helps you emotionally. You can have a mentor who helps you with the life skills of basically being just a better networker. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different ways where we mentor to people. I mean, a lot of the students who I work with, it's not about me literally teaching them the X's and O's of how to be a doctor. It's me literally helping them learn how to write an email, right? Learning how to address people when you're talking to them in a professional setting, learning when to turn on the doctor this and doctor that, right, versus let me talk to this person outside of these four walls that is a educational institution, sure, and sure, let's go ahead and take off that professional hat and be personal, mm-hmm, right? So I think the idea of mentoring gets the the wrong connotation of, well, we're not in an academic setting, so I can't really be a mentor.
Right.
I don't work in an academic field, so I can't be a mentor. And that's completely, I would say it's completely inaccurate. You know, sure, some people just think about it in this very thinly constructed silo.
Sure.
And they think that mentors have to be academic. And therefore, if I'm not academic, I can't mentor someone.
I can't mentor.
And sometimes these students just need someone there to show them you care. It's going to be all right. And look, I done made it. You can do it too. Just absolutely, keep going, especially those minority students. Those minority students that don't have but one potential person that looks like them that may come into their life and change their trajectory compared to others who have 15 doctors in their family.
Right.
Or 15 academic professors in their family. You know, those little small things we don't have, that mentor piece just changes how people end up succeeding in life, academically, financially, all of those things.
You know, I'm going to say something that you said and let it tie into our next question. You mentioned how you had some significant difficulties with step one. And you said something that we've talked about on this program many times with many different people. But I want to give you an opportunity to speak on that and then go into this next question. Simply, thought that I'm having is, how did you overcome that imposter syndrome that you mentioned? Because it's a very real thing, especially when you don't have many people who look like you and you're trying to pursue a career where you're underrepresented and you are confident and everything that you know and in your abilities determines greatly how far you can go in this medical field, despite what some may think. So I'm wondering, how'd you overcome that? And then tell us a little bit about how CMMP came into existence.
Yeah. So to answer your first question, overcoming imposter syndrome, it's a lot of things that just fell into place for me. And I would say that it's not an easy one size fits all approach. Some people, it's just continuing to show their resolve and getting positive success from being consistent and putting in the work. Some people, it's having other people come in and kind of give you that boost, giving you those words of encouragement, showing you that support. So for me, it was a little bit of a mixture. For me, passing step one literally solidified that I belonged, right? And it wasn't so much that I didn't think I belonged overall, but I definitely started having doubts. I'm like, why is it that I can't pass this test? Like, am I not smart enough? Am I just not understanding how medicine works? Mm-hmm. I mean, I could go in a room and diagnose and treat and write prescriptions with the best of them. I mean, that was something I could do in my sleep. It's just sitting for 8 hours and clicking boxes. It's just the worst thing ever, right? Like nails on chalkboard bad. So with that idea, it definitely started rocking my confidence, not because I didn't have a ton of it. It was just, if I can't pass this, maybe I shouldn't be here. So for me, it was passing that got me there. But what literally erased it besides the pass is that I had a big tribe of people, friends, family, colleagues, coworkers who literally just kind of poured into me, right? Like I had people that I would be exhausted studying wee hours of the morning and barely making it. And they would come and give me a gift card. This is a meal for you.
Right.
I didn't get stuff to eat. Like that little gesture just changes your mindset. Like all of a sudden I don't have to eat noodles. Like those right. noodles while they're sustaining, it changes your mindset when you don't have to stress as much. Hence why the minority student has so many obstacles. People don't even think about it. Like when we're over here trying to study for a step exam, but we got to worry about our rent and we got to worry about mom not having lights on at the house. Like you're not locked in like somebody who doesn't have that stress. When you got to take out six figures worth of loans,
right.
And you're worried about how the money is going to flow into your account so you can pay your bills and whether or not you can do all that, you're not locked in. So my imposter syndrome it was resolved not only because me passing the test, but I had people around me who knew I belonged.
So you would advocate for being transparent, not only to the people in medicine, but also to those you can trust around you immediately to
Absolutely.
Help you through them. Okay.
You have to. And I can't say that enough. It was one thing I had to learn the hard way. And I tell students, don't wait until you failed so much like me that you then have to come and ask for help when you're in a hole. Do it at the beginning. Don't be the prideful one, because as a good book says that a lot of people know, pride comes before the fall.
Mm.
And if you're literally waiting until you don't have anything, you hit rock bottom, it's not the best approach. And that's what happens to a lot of us. We're so prideful because we're taught we have to be. We're taught we can't ask for help. When you ask for help, you look weak.
Right.
So by you having that mindset, you don't, and you just keep digging this hole. So I think having that transparency was a huge thing for me. Had I done that in the beginning, had I done that before the second failure, had I done that before the third failure, I wouldn't have had as many problems. But for me, it was embarrassing.
Sure.
All of my classmates had passed. Why didn't I? Right. Why would I ask for help when I think it's just, oh, you know, I just messed up that one time. I can do it again. It wasn't me walking to anybody and say, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just taking a test. I'm hoping it goes well. So all of that being said, there's a lot of stuff that helps to eliminate that imposter syndrome. And it's really a figure out what works for you. If it's getting people to come in and help build you up, let them build you up. There's nothing wrong with that. If it's asking for help, do that. If it's giving yourself the reward for you achieving something small, you know, it doesn't sound like much, but sometimes that little small reward for yourself gives you a little bit more of a boost to get to the next level. To answer the second part of your question, DMMP came as a result of that struggle. DMMP happened after my residency. So mind you, I had the struggles in medical school. I got to residency and I also failed my step three. So people don't realize that, again, Dr. Jasper is not as polished as it looks on paper. And I'm okay with that because it made me who I am today. But in step three, I did not pass. We had to go back to the resolve that I learned for step one and pass the second time. But all of those little struggles had me thinking, okay, what can I do to potentially prevent people from having that happen? So in my fellowship, I did a fellowship in Washington, D.C. called the Community Health Leadership Development Fellowship at Georgetown University. And I was a junior faculty. And one of the things we had to do within that fellowship was to come up with a program that impacted the lives of people within the Washington, D.C. area that were underserved. And it could be anything. It could have been about obesity. It could have been about hypertension. It could have been about diabetes. And for me, I was like, yeah, you know, those things didn't speak to me. So I thought about doing a mentoring program.
Mm.
And the name of the actual program was Comprehensive Medical Mentoring Program, or CMMP. And CMMP actually started off as a four-week crash course getting into medical school if you're a minority student. Literally 4 weeks, a bunch of sessions, community service, blah, 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 blah. I say that because it was so much stuff that I tried to do into 4 weeks that it couldn't be 4 weeks, so it had to be 8 weeks.
Right.
So it literally turned into an eight-week program where we had a bunch of mentors and a pipeline structure from high school to undergrad to medical school to residents to attendings come into a pipeline and mentor each other. Not mentor from the top down, but mentor from the bottom up. Students mentoring students, residents mentoring medical students mentoring attendings. And it literally worked so well that we then did it another year. And after the second year, we did it a third year. And then after the third year, we ended up deciding to become a nonprofit organization. And now we're a nonprofit organization throughout the country, actually doing this program and different programs to allow those same students that potentially need that mentor experience, those opportunities and those things that will allow them to get to the next level. to be accessible without having to pay for anything. Our stuff is potentially, if not wholly, donation-based, to the point where we are literally a nonprofit that if you give us money, you can write it off on your taxes, simple plug. And if you decide that you want to do that, you hopefully will not, If you do that donation, you will not only be pouring into the organization, you're pouring it directly into a student who needs assistance to get into the medical field. It doesn't have to be doctors. That's kind of where we focus on medical school, but we also do nursing. We also do physical therapy. We do a little bit of everything with the hope of getting more of the minority students into the medical field so they can help to take care of more of our community. So the mindset just grew from an idea and the know-how of I'm not going to be denied. I belong here. And as I said, when they let me, and I say let, but when they let me pass step one, they messed up. It was over. It was like, oh, y'all have no idea what you just did. I was so ready that now it's to a point where I do so many things. It's not a question of if it'll work, it's how it's going to work.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. You know, some of you might be wondering how come we're not hearing Dr. Tochi's wonderful voice. She's always moving. That's what leadership, one of the many sacrifices that comes with leadership. And so she's actually sent me a question to ask. She's live with us right now, but the audio, as you can imagine, when moving is not as good. But one of the questions she wants to know is, how does one become a mentor? What are the skills needed or the qualifications? Because a lot of us may not know whether or not we are actually ready to embark upon mentoring someone. So how do you know if you're ready?
Yeah, I think it's not necessarily you know. I think it's just you have a feeling that you want to help. It doesn't have to be a blueprint of you get this resume, you've achieved this certification, you've made it to this level, so now you're ready to be a mentor. As I mentioned in our organization, our students mentor us. And people will say, well, what does that mean? I'm going to give you a case in point. If you don't know that students know way more than you at certain things, just go in and ask them about doing stuff on social media. Hands down, some of the best teaching you ever learn about social media came from our undergraduate students.
Right.
Apps that I never knew existed, how to make flyers, how to schedule stuff. I was just like, man, y'all are amazing, right? And they mentor into us when we don't know certain things. Dr. Jackson, let me show you how to do this. Give me your phone. Like, and I'm like, okay, I'll give them the phone and they do stuff. And I'm like, that took 10 seconds. It takes me 2 hours to figure this stuff out. And from there, the mentoring goes the other way where I can hopefully help them with how to show up to an actual interview and be ready to blow people out of the water from their interview skills. So my point is, you don't have to necessarily have everything lined up on your resume and get to a level to say, okay, I think I'm ready to be a mentor now. It doesn't have to be. As long as you have a desire to help and you're willing to take and you're willing to become authentic with whoever you're mentoring, the rest is going to work itself out because you're going to literally give them stuff you know very well that they may not, and vice versa. And by doing that, we all become better, right? It doesn't have to be where a minority student gets mentored from a minority attending. I mean, it doesn't happen. Some of the best people in our organization are white males and females, and they mentor our minority students all the time. Like, and it's to the point where for me, it's just more about your desire to help and you're willing to be authentic and the rest will work itself out. That's the best way I can say it.
Something that you mentioned that I bring light to again, I do some work overseas, some mission work overseas. I love to travel and I love medicine and I love different cultures. So doing mission work overseas blends all those together. And I read a book called When Helping Hurts. And something that you said made me think about that book. It was written by a white guy, a physician who went overseas, and make a long story short, in his attempts to help the population, he makes a misstep where he forgets that instead of just providing what he feels like is the answer, it's more important to empower, ensure that you're not looking down on the people that you're helping, but remembering that they too have the same abilities and the same aptitudes that we have. When you talked about allowing the students to mentor you and then going around and then turning around and mentoring them, it kind of levels the playing field, I think, and maybe makes them more receptive to what you have to say. So I think that's brilliant, because I don't know that, I think many people who think about mentorship, they automatically put this hat on where it means the person listening to me really has nothing to add in terms of value to my life. It's my job to make them understand the knowledge and the gift that is within me. So I just commend you for that, because I think that's something that we often forget, that it's a two-way street and age doesn't mean that they have less to offer us. You eloquently stated that. So that's wonderful.
Yeah. And I'll jump on and say, I think it also not only levels the playing field, it shows that you are willing to be vulnerable. And that sense of being vulnerable will often disarm the most emboldened person to say, you know what? He's just like me. Right. And we don't have to be twins and come from the exact same neighborhood, grew up in the same system. But if we have similarities and we just find those similarities, it all of a sudden changes how you have a conversation with somebody. And if you don't believe me, go to any coffee shop or whatever and realize that somebody who you potentially are talking to either lived where you live for a little bit or went to the same school, not even at the same time, just lived in the same neighborhood, same area, or went to the same school. They could be 20 years older than you and you graduated from the same college. All of a sudden, the conversation changes. You went to such and such school. I did too. And all of a sudden, you're excited to have a conversation. So when a student learns that you are vulnerable and they can see some small similarity in them with you, you're in the military, they're in the military, right? You're wanting to do family medicine, they want to do outpatient medicine. All of a sudden, they start to listen a little differently than what they would have if you were the senior and they're the subordinate. So I think it's leveling the playing field, but also being honest, open, and vulnerable to say, hey, yeah, I failed. I failed tests all the time, right? So don't worry about that C you got. Right. I made it. I had a few C's, probably more C's than a lot, but that gives the person a chance to literally look at you and say, I can see myself in them. So I know that I can do this. And they're going to not just step back and let me fail. They're going to keep on pouring into me to where I keep going. And that mentorship piece just continues to grow upon itself. Because when that mentor and mentee connect, it doesn't just turn off, right? As much as you want it to potentially, okay, I'm busy. Like my students, and I say students because some of them are postgraduate students, meaning they graduated several years ago. Some of them are recent grads. Some of them are still in school. Some of them are residents. Like I have a gamut of students I mentor, so to speak. And they still just hit me up out of the blue. Hey, Dr. Jasper, what you up to? And I'm usually my authentic self. I'm like, well, it depends on the day, but I'm either working or I'm about to go to work or I'm sleeping because I just got off from work. And they all know that I'm joking because they're like, do you ever stop working? I'm like, depends on the day. All right. So it's just those conversations where they know if I hit them up and I send them a random funny something from social media, they know I'm thinking about this. Right. It's just those little small things that all of a sudden they're like, if I got a question, I know I can call them. If I'm having a tough time, I can hit him up. And those conversations, those moments just literally transcend time, place, effort. They're in different states. They're in different cities. We still have that relationship to where they know I can be there if they need me and vice versa. If I have a question, they'll help me out. And, I pick up students all the time. Random residents call me and they're like, so-and-so told me that I need to talk to you. And when I'm like, all right, give me 2 hours, we'll sit down and we'll just start talking. It then turns into once every 2 or 3 months, I get a text message of, let me tell you what just happened. And it's good news. Or, hey, let me tell you what has happened. It's bad news, but it's a authentic relationship.
One thing I'll say, and then I'm going to let you have the word with your last 3 points. You made a comment that I think is, again, very important. And you touched on what a mentor looks like, because we know that many of our listeners are indeed white males, white females. And I think there may be times where they don't recognize their value and their importance and joining efforts for underrepresented communities, particularly as pertains to the journey to academic medicine. So I really enjoyed you hearing that you definitely look to them for support and as torchbearers in some of these areas, because they can help us. And this is not exclusive. This is not, I don't wear kente cloth, so I'm not going to pay attention. This is... Yeah. This is an all hands on deck type of situation. So I really applaud you bringing in people of all colors, particularly our white brothers and sisters who can help in these areas. So that's wonderful.
Yeah. And I can't say it enough where the idea is that you don't have to be a mentor in a specific space to mentor others in that same space. We have people who aren't necessarily physicians mentoring our students to become physicians. I'll say that again. We have people who are not physicians that mentor our students to become physicians because sometimes they just need a professional to tell them, yeah, that email, I know you think it looks good, but we got to work on this. And that email can, that little small nudge can help them to the next level. Right. So it's not the idea that you have to be an MD or a DO to mentor students who want to go to medical school.
Right.
It doesn't have to be where you're a Black male, so you need a Black male mentee.
Right.
You know, you just literally want to help people. And we're all in the medical field because more than likely we want to help people. Right. So it's just taking the hat off of being a clinical help to being, let me do an academic, a personal, a emotional sense of helping students, right? I've had students literally tell me some of my best mentoring came from someone who's not the same race, ethnicity, gender, religion as myself.
Sure.
Because they've taught me stuff I would have never learned had I only had someone that looked, spoke, and did all the things that I did, you know? So I often tell people, if you just want to help, number one, we're always looking for more mentors and more people to help with things we're doing. We're not going to get it right every time. That's part of the reason of we understanding that those battle scars, those wounds,
right.
It's okay to not get it right every time. But if you just say we're in it for the right reason, the rest is going to work itself out. And I believe the students we have the need and the want to have good people in their lives. And when they find us, we literally do everything we can to make them successful. If they're not, it's okay. But they will find some success somewhere down the road because they just have positive people in their lives. So having those people come in, know they want to help, don't have to have the long resume, but just know I want to get my hands dirty, if you will. The rest is going to work itself out. And we are often telling you, you can mentor anyone as long as you authentically want.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. As you know, Dr. Sochi is still with us, but we can't get audio. But if she were here, I know she would ask you, what are your three take-home points that you would like our guests and our listeners to keep with them as they think about what they've just heard from you today?
Yeah, I would say if we're looking in the vein of, or we're looking in the scope of mentoring, I think the first thing I'd say is do not believe that you have to have it all figured out today. If it's one thing I learned from some of the things I do outside of the actual nonprofit organization, in other areas is that I'm still figuring it out and I am technically an attending physician, has been attending physician for several years. And it looks good to see all of the highlights, but figuring it out during the process sometimes gives you more information and tells you a lot about yourself more than you would had you figured it out in the first try or you had it all lined up in the very beginning. Second point I would say is it's okay to not be okay. And it's okay to not necessarily be perfect. Mm. Again, I failed so many times. I fail almost weekly, if not daily. And I do that not because I want to fail, but I also do that because I'm trying so many different things that right. I'm not afraid to fail because I know it's going to make me better. So being that person who is not perfect and being that person who's battle tested often gives you experience and wisdom. So I am a huge advocate for not waiting to have it all lined up to get started, but also being okay with failing, but knowing that you're going to get there if you continue to stay in the fight. And the third point I think is most important is that do not wait to ask for help when you're literally going through it, right? Like as soon as something goes wrong, ask, talk to somebody. When people say, how's your day? Stop saying, you know what? I'm doing great. When you're really not, you know you're going through it, tell somebody. And it changes the mindset, the way people communicate with you, the way that you communicate with other people. And it gives you that ability to start making connections, right? If I see Dr. Hodge or Dr. Tochi and they say, Dr. Jasper, how you feeling? I'm like, man, I'm having a bad day. They're not going to say, all right, good. Keep it going. You know, like they're going to probably say, you know what? What's going on? Let's have a moment. And having those experiences where you're vulnerable, you're okay with not getting it all right. And also starting and not waiting for everything to be perfect is going to make you so much better in the academic sense, in the personal sense, in the career sense. And overall, I think it's just going to give more people a reason to say, let's work together because I like how this person carries themselves. I like the fact that they're themselves all the time. And it's not always the button up perfect version that has everything figured out. All the boxes are checked. All the I's are dotted. All the T's are crossed. And if you're doing it in those potential three things, I'm sure there's way more we could say. Those three things, I think, will start to put you in a space where you feel better about the things you're doing. And even if you're not great at it, you're going to get better and better to where people start calling you for those opportunities that you often thought would be so far-fetched that now all of a sudden they're at your doorstep.
Well said. We are so honored to have you. And those were many, many, many pearls that I know that the listeners will glean from. some of the things that were just confirmation and some things that they probably hadn't considered. So that's wonderful. And I wish you continued success with CMMP. I think it's a wonderful organization. And just once again, we just want to thank you for taking some time out today to talk with us. We're better off having known you. So best wishes to you. Okay.
Thank you all again. I really appreciate the opportunity and love what y'all are doing. Keep it up.
We hope you've been enjoying this podcast series. Please consider filling out a 2-minute survey to help us serve you better. Go to www.stfm.org/urmjam to complete the survey and enter a raffle for a $25 Starbucks gift card. This raffle offer is good until September 29th, 2022.
You've been listening to the URM Journey to Academic Medicine podcast, brought to you by the Society of Teachers of Family Medicine. You can find more episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other podcast providers, as well as on our website at stfm.org/urmjam. Follow us on Twitter at stfm_fm.